This is File 13, Cycle 3. Today's date is December 7th, 2017. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Barbara Collins, and she's going to talk about her life, career, and Christian education director at the Congregational Church, and anything else that she wants to talk about. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Barbara Collins.
And what is your maiden name?
Aitchison.
And when were you born?
I was born in April 1941.
April 30th?
April 30th, 1941.
And where were you born?
I was born in Glendale, California.
Ah, you're one of those California girls.
My father was a professor at University of Southern California, professor of physics.
And what was his name?
John Aitchison.
And your mother?
Lucille Aitchison.
And what was her maiden name?
Lynn, L-Y-N-N.
And do you have siblings?
I have a brother, had a brother. He passed away last year.
Oh, dear.
James Aitchison. In the Aitchison family, you skipped generations. It went James, John, James, John, James, John, James, John. Mostly.
Like Titchener, the Warner family would go Titchener, Judson, Titchener, Judsons.
Yeah, perhaps not as exotic as that. James and John are too exotic.
But they're very nice names. They really are.
My dad was a Scot. He was born in Scotland.
Oh.
They immigrated to Canada when he was 8 and then came down to Ohio when Dad was in, had finished high school and went to Ohio Wesleyan University. My grandfather was a professional golfer.
Oh, great.
He designed the golf course at Ohio Wesleyan. That's why he came there.
Oh, wonderful.
It no longer exists. It's probably covered with dorm buildings and classrooms and whatnot, but anyway.
What a wonderful history,
though. So that's how my paternal family came to the States and came to Ohio, and my mom was from Ohio, and she was a student at Ohio Wesleyan, so that's where my parents met. They ended up in California during the Depression.
Uh-huh.
And then when the war came, my dad was too old to fight. But he, as a physicist, worked for Columbia University in contract for the Navy to do mainly submarine works, sonar. They were studying. They were advisors for sonar.
Oh, wonderful!
So he, at the end of the war, became affiliated with Johns Hopkins University, applied physics lab, who also did work for the Navy Department. So that's when we, in 1945, we moved to the Washington area. And he worked for Johns Hopkins for his whole life from then on. Mm-hmm. And then eventually got into missiles rather than the sonar.
So wonderful.
He was involved with the Navy and guided missiles.
Gracious sakes.
It was always top secret.
Oh, yeah.
So every year we had to fill out lots of forms from school as to what your father's profession was, and other children could write carpenter and, you know, storekeeper, and I had to ask my dad what I should put down.
Oh, my word.
He wasn't a spy.
No,
he wasn't a spy. But anyway.
But he was in secret work.
Yes, he was in highly secret work, and
No, Foster went into a defense plant as an inspector, and he worked on the space shuttle, and he used to do plate glass windows for battleships and yachts. So, he was a marine engineer.
Somebody's got to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, with all of the moving around, how did you come to this area?
Well, I didn't move around that much. I mean, I was born in California, moved to Silver Spring, Maryland in 1945. I went to college at Gettysburg College. In Pennsylvania.
Were you a music major?
I was a music education major.
Mm-hmm.
And I met my husband, who was also a music education major, Lee Collins. And he was from Connecticut. So when we were married in 1963, there was no question that we were coming to Connecticut and not going to Maryland. So that's when we came to, that's when I came to Connecticut in 63. And he was already employed as a teacher. He was a year ahead of me. He was employed as a teacher in Bristol, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I got a job in Bristol, so that's we were in Bristol until 1970.
And then you came here.
And then we came here because we wanted to move out into less populated area. Mm-hmm. And if the job in Kent and Cornwall, which Lee eventually took at the elementary schools, hadn't been available, we might have ended up in Vermont or someplace up in the, up
now,
in the countryside.
You taught music at Falls Village?
Yes. Well, I taught in Bristol for 3 years, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then I retired because I was a stay-at-home mom.
Good for you.
And was that for 10 years. Well, and then in 1976, I went to Lee Kellogg School in Falls Village.
And so how long did you...
32 years there. It was a part-time job.
But still.
It's a small school.
Yeah, it's a small school, but still you have to be prepared.
Oh, absolutely.
And you had two children, Peter and...
Peter and Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how did you get connected to the Congregational Church?
Well, Lee was raised as a Congregationalist. I was raised as a Methodist. And
it works.
We, in Bristol, and both of our families had been very active in church. So when we were married, we knew that eventually we would be, but we weren't.
Yeah. Well, it was a time for
everything. I used to go to the laundromat on Sunday mornings when we lived in Bristol. And then, as often happens, when we had our first child, well, now we have to start going to church.
Yeah.
And we went to the Methodist church, which was quite close to where we lived in Bristol, to try it, to see what it was mm-hmm, like. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be the first day they had gotten their new hymnals.
Oh.
And they were so excited about these new hymnals, and it was a very... chaotic is not the right word, but it was not a normal church service because we were busy looking at... My husband was not impressed. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And it was probably inevitable that we were going to end up at the Congregational Church anyway. And to this day, I am so grateful. So grateful to be a member of the UCC. I just...
It's a wonderful, wonderful church.
I just wonder what... who I would have been if I hadn't been affiliated with the
yep.
UCC over all these yep. years. So we were Congregationalists when we moved here.
And
so that was automatically in 1970, that was automatically going to happen. In fact, one of the first stops we made, and not because we knew that Al Sly was there and it was a fantastic music program, but because that was going to be our church home anyway.
Sure. But Al Sly helped.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Lee joined the choir right away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't because the kids were still pretty young.
Oh, yeah.
But then we got a regular babysitter, and mm-hmm. that was something we did on Wednesday nights. It was our one night out, was to go to choir practice.
But you needed that.
And then the children were old enough to leave them upstairs to play. Thump, thump, thump.
Yeah.
Eventually, and we had a friend in the choir whose kids also came, and so the four of them would be up there. So we would take turns going upstairs to see who had done what up there. But they played very nicely, and it was great.
Oh, so but they were good kids.
So the kids grew up literally in the church.
They were good kids.
Yeah. They were very good kids. They're very good grown-ups, too.
Yes, well, it takes good parenting to make. Yeah. It really does.
Well, they had the right ingredients. They had good
They had good forebears. Foster used to say he had at least one good gene.
That's wonderful.
He had a good sense of humor. When did you become director of Christian education? Or whatever the proper term
is.
Yeah,
I was on the... somewhere, probably around 72 or 3, I was on the Board of Religious Education. And Fran Wagner had been the superintendent of the Sunday school for many years.
Oh, yeah.
And she retired. When Noble Horizons was built, Fran became very involved mm-hmm. there she was a younger person compared with the the early residents. She later became a resident herself. But and we didn't have a lot of children at that point in the Sunday school. It was definitely kind of a low ebb. And somehow or another, I just started teaching, and then I ended up being the superintendent.
It works that way.
It sort of happens that way. And, and very often, that's how people come into Christian education, I think, because of their own children. They want to make sure their kids... It's not unlike scouting or any other thing, or athletics. You want your kid to have that experience, so you get involved in it yourself.
Oh, absolutely. What would you say the Sunday school attendance is now? Is it 10, 15 children or more?
We probably have, if everyone who has been to Sunday school up through, let's say, up through fifth grade this year, we could probably have 40 children.
Oh, my word.
We average about 15 to 20 a week. And then we do have probably 6 or 8 middle school kids. There again, you know, they're on the rolls, and they've probably been there once, once or twice at least this year since September.
What do you, what is your goal? What do you try to teach the children? You told me that it was God, God is, and God is love. Is that basically?
I think that's as far as theology goes. I think that's would be my first thing. I think too, for the children aren't going to remember a lot of details about the names of the 12 disciples or the books of the Bible. They might remember scripture passages, sentences, phrases, if it's been really drilled into them. We don't have heavy doctrine in the UCC.
No.
We don't have catechism. That is, we don't have specific answer that is part of our education. But I think more important than anything is that the kids are comfortable in a place where you can talk about something beyond yourself.
Yep. And
that church is a good thing, and it's a good place to be, and it's a comfortable place to be, and perhaps a challenging place to be.
But that's all right.
But you can learn, I mean, you know, love God, love yourself, love others.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
Do you have a set curriculum, or do you sort of adjust to the children that you have?
I should say I.
You do it.
Well, I'm kind of a person who likes to run things. So
We need people like that.
We call it curating these days in faith formation. It's a term that's fairly widely used now, even across all the spectrums, including Catholic instruction. They're calling it faith formation now rather than Christian education. It's trying to get away from the idea of the education as the model of faith formation. That is, the way we think of school, the way we think of education. So you have classrooms, and you have desks and chairs, tables, and you have lessons, and you have lesson plans, and you have curriculum, and you have, and you call it Sunday school. I have not changed what we call it because people don't know what I'm talking about. But the model of workbooks and written work and that kind of thing is not really the thrust of what we do anymore. And it's choosing different ways of learning, about and experiencing whatever it is you're trying to, you know, to get across. So, I mean, if it may just be a story, but what we did Moses and the Exodus this fall, mm-hmm. and so what? You know, it yeah. isn't just the story. It's what can we learn from the story, and how can we apply that today? Mm-hmm. And why is that story important to the religion?
Okay.
And you know how? And I mean, the Ten Commandments aren't suggestions. They're really guidelines mm-hmm. on how we live mm-hmm. with each other. I mean, six of them are how we live with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Four of them are related to our relationship with God. But six yeah. six of the ten are yeah. how people, when they live in community, need yeah. to. You don't kill each other, and you don't lie, and you don't take stuff that's not
yeah.
yours.
Yeah. And you honor your parents,
and you honor your parents, and so I mean that's not really religion in a way. It's just getting along with people,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about relationship. Religion
oh, sure.
religion is all about relationship, whether it's vertical
or horizontal.
Mm-hmm. And our pastor Diane has a wonderful children's sermon that she has done more than once, that it's so wonderful. And she talks about the peace of God that is in each of us, and how we're connected with this golden thread to God because of our soul. Our soul is on the other end of that, and there's a peace of God in all of us. And so I took that idea and said to the children that, because it was such a great sermon, and that day it was perfect, I said, okay, so that's the golden thread, and then the silver thread is what we have this way.
Clever.
You know, and when we're connected, and it's about how we relate to each other, and then the golden thread is to God.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And I was really impressed with that. I thought,
hey.
Yeah, okay, because that is what it's all
certainly.
About. But I've gone to a lot of workshops and conferences about Christian education and faith formation, not just related to the UCC. One of the best people in the trade right now disrespectful to call it a trade, is a man by the name of John Roberto, who does Vibrant Faith is the name of his thing. And he's a Catholic, but it doesn't matter. It's still the same how you go about forming faith in people of all ages, and mm-hmm. that it's not just for children. We're all, as we go through life, mm-hmm. our faith continues to be formed and transformed and informed.
And evolved. And
all those
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
forms.
Yeah.
I've forgotten where I was going with that.
Well, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. When we talked before, you spoke about a rotation model.
Yes. One of the more popular forms of faith formation these days is called the rotation model. It's not used exclusively, but a lot of people are using it across the spectrum, all different denominations. And it takes a theme, which might be a story. It might be Moses and the Exodus. It might be Abraham and Sarah. Or it might be hunger. Or it might be prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a specific theme, and it will have a unit of six to however four, six, however many weeks, sessions, I should say, approaching that theme from all different possible angles. Mm-hmm. Could be through art. It could be through music. It could be through drama. It could be through storytelling. It could be through any variety of particularly artistic things, crafts,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Something that enriches and enhances and expands the idea of the goals of what you're after there. I come at this as a person trained in education.
Sure.
So it's hard for me not to have very careful lesson plans. I'm sorry. I try not to call it lesson plans.
But you have
I try
to have...
not to call it teachers. I try to call it leaders.
Yeah, and, but still
but
it's
I mean, we
training.
Know what it still is.
Oh, yeah, we do. You know, they change the names, but the idea is
right.
the same.
The idea is the
yeah.
same.
Yeah. Oh, when do you actually, what time frame do you have for Sunday school?
You mean on a given Sunday?
Yeah, would it be like 10:30 to 11:15?
Church begins, worship begins at 10, and the children come to the first part of the service, which will include the first hymn, the invocation, the prayer of confession, the scripture reading, and then the Hebrew scripture reading and the psalm. And then the pastor gives a children's message, mm-hmm. and then we leave. It's probably about 10:25, and we dismiss at 11:10. Usually, run over a little bit.
Oh, okay,
but we do dismiss at 11:10 so that we don't, in case church has gone a little long, it might.
Yeah,
we don't
yeah.
want the kids loose.
No.
Yes. Anyway, that's not good.
I understand.
We begin in September. We don't run a summer program. We begin in September, and we, because of my background and my inclination, we end in May with a musical, with a children's musical.
Oh, really?
And that takes the place of the old-fashioned Children's Day. The youth usually participate by ushering and reading the scripture and leading the prayers, and then the younger kids do a musical as the sermon.
Wow, wonderful.
It's not a musical. It's not Hello, Dolly or Oklahoma.
but it's still it's
but,
kids participating
yes,
in the service.
Yes, the kid and it depends. This last year we did something that I put together myself, which was called the God's Family Tree. Which was basically the golden rule,
mm-hmm.
That we're all children of God and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But then the year before we did, and we've done Jonah, and we've done Zacchaeus up in the tree,
oh, my
and
word.
We've done the loaves and fishes.
Uh-huh.
There are musicals that are written. I usually edit considerably.
Yeah.
Either we don't do all of the songs, or I put another one in,
mm-hmm.
or I have a great tendency to change the dialogue because...
To make it kid-friendly.
Unfortunately, well, they're written for children to do, and there's one pair of authors or composers, lyricists that I really like. Their music, and I like their theology, but the dialogue leaves so much to be desired because it's usually written, when it's written to be hip and really with it.
Oh.
And
ugh.
What happens is after about 5 years, anything that's remotely hip...
Isn't a hip any longer.
Is no longer hip.
No.
And I also, quite frankly, don't have enough time to work with the children on the drama dialogue part of it.
Yeah.
So I tend to make it more narration with less speaking parts on the part of the children.
And that's easier on the children, too.
It is. I mean, I love theater, but we just don't have the time.
You're limited. You're limited in time, and you're limited in who's going to show up.
Now, this year, the calendar falls out that it will be on Pentecost, so we'll be doing Fruits of the Spirit.
Oh,
so
good.
That will be one that I'll be putting together myself. We have done it before. I'll be altering it. But, you know, like love and joy and peace and self-control. Especially self-control, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
And the generosity
that's
and so
one.
On. So.
Do you have any other Sunday school teachers, or do you do the whole thing?
I always have another person with me, and sometimes more. Depending on what we're doing, it's nigh on impossible to get anyone to commit to being a teacher
every Sunday
for any length of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for a while, this is years ago, we had people sign on like for a month to do a unit. We had a written curriculum at that point.
Yeah.
I have some people who are naturals, and so either they have teaching experience or they're just naturals. So when I know I have that, I ask parents and others to help me pick a day. So when I know I have them, then I'm apt to divide the group and know that that person is going to be comfortable handling it. But some parents aren't that comfortable with it. So we just do a one-room schoolhouse thing, and they're just kind of their aides.
That's good.
Contributors.
Yeah.
But nobody has to do any planning.
Except all
the materials are provided.
Yeah.
The lesson is provided.
You do all the work.
Yeah. And I'm cool with that.
Good. Because it makes a difference. The preparation that you put into the lesson determines the success of the lesson.
Yeah.
I learned that a long time ago.
Yes. And as a music teacher, you learn that probably the first year.
Oh, yeah.
The first concert you learn, because you have decided what you're going to do for the concert.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't make a good decision, and you get to that point and you realize this was a mistake,
you're in deep trouble.
This is too hard.
Yeah.
We've never been all the way through. The band has never been all the way through this piece without stopping or falling apart.
Uh-huh.
The plan is really, really important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't do music, but I did other things.
But same thing. Only perhaps a concert is a little more evident.
Yes.
unless you're talking about how well your students do on some kind of standardized test or something. I guess we should have spent a little bit more time on the 3x table.
I used to do theater with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this was when I was doing my own schedule, and the academics would be in the morning, and then we'd do play rehearsal in the afternoon. And I did puppets, I did shadow puppets, all sorts of things, because the kids needed that outlet. You could do that then. You can't do it now.
No.
But the more prepared they were,
if
something unusual happened, they could cope.
But it always will happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You will know it's going to happen.
And you don't know
what.
You prepare for what you think is going to be the snag, and it turns out to be something that's entirely different. It's like, whoa, what just happened? What was that?
You know.
That is an experience that children need to have.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't get it that much anymore.
No. And it was, I did science, and this was an experiment. It's good to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's all right to make mistakes. And that was something that sometimes was difficult for the children to, you mean I don't have to be perfect all the time?
If you don't experience
failure,
and I don't want to call it failure, but if you don't experience mistakes,
you don't grow.
You don't really move on.
No, and you have to move on.
And when you're talking about performance, you have to have experienced that.
I taught public speaking to my fourth graders.
Yes.
And these were the slow learners and the B-level reading group.
Yeah.
But they could get up and do a report and do it well, because we started in September.
Mm-hmm.
And even though my kids weren't, quote, as bright as the other kids, they were comfortable in their skins doing this.
This is something I've felt very strongly about for years in school, and there's just not time.
Oh,
there's
I know.
In the classroom, the regular school classroom today. To speak clearly and
enunciate
and not
sway back and forth. Keep your hands out of your pockets. Eye contact.
Yeah. Not go so fast, because if I don't go fast, I'll forget what I have to say.
Yeah.
So I have to talk really fast or I'll forget my lines.
Yeah.
That's why I don't have the time to do that.
No, with all of the other things that
with
you
our
do.
Musical, but the kids. I had a little one ask me the other day what we were going to do that.
Oh, but they look forward to it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, some show up again that I haven't seen for a while. On the other hand, some all of a sudden become absent. So.
Yeah, well.
You never know.
There are the hams, and there are the ones that aren't hams. Do you teach confirmation class, or does Diane?
And confirmation is handled by her.
And how many will you have to confirm this year?
I don't really know. This is a kind of an off. This is an off year. We have done it like every other year. For
example. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It depends. It depends on
the numbers.
It depends on the numbers. Yeah.
Now you've had quite a lot of training in Christian education, and you've gone to workshops and so forth. What is ACE?
ACE is Associate in Christian Education. It was a program that lasted for maybe 20 years out of Hartford Seminary and the Connecticut Conference Center of the UCC. It was a year-long course. Wasn't every Tuesday. I would say it was probably two full days a month for the academic year. It was, my particular year was extraordinary. We had 15, I think we had one Episcopalian, everybody else was UCC, from all over the state. In fact, one woman drove in from Rhode Island every time. Probably not that much, probably didn't take much that, not much longer than it took me to get to Hartford.
Probably not.
It was a tremendous experience, and interestingly enough, definitely run on the educational model. Not
yeah, it would be.
But there were other things a couple of things come to mind. One was the community that we built, these 15 people, plus the two women who ministers who were our facilitators. It'd be called teachers today.
Yeah, I know.
And the second thing was, one of the projects that we did was we all had to choose a character from the Bible and research that person, and tell that person's story in first person.
Oh, my word.
I wanted to be the snake in the garden, the serpent, but they didn't let me do that.
Oh, what a shame.
I thought that would be fun, but they didn't let me do that. But I chose Hagar, who was Sarah's slave, servant, and the mother of Ishmael, the father of the Arabs. And I remember, and that's years ago. That was the mid '80s. I mean, one woman did Sarah. One woman did Noah's wife, and it was a hoot. I mean, she had taped some water flowing. Mm-hmm. So she had this tape recorder going, and she set up a card table somehow that was supposed to be this boat, and she's telling this story, and he had promised her a cruise,
it was really
fun. And then another one was the Mary and Martha story. I always forget which one was the one who sat at Jesus' feet and which was the one who did the work. But she was the one who did all the work.
I think
that was Martha.
It was Martha, I think.
And she was so ticked off, and she'd been shopping. I mean, I've got to feed these guys, you know? There's 12 of them plus Jesus. I'm going to have to feed them, and who's going to go to the market and get this stuff? And she's got a grocery basket on her arm. And this is a long time ago. So I think that, to me, is really telling about
people,
the story.
Yeah,
when we tell our own stories, which is what you're doing. You're asking people to tell their stories, and how you learn from that, how you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Things
yeah.
that somebody told you, or I remember the story my grandmother told me about this or that.
Yeah.
because it really struck you and it seemed, it was real.
Yeah.
It was really real. So anyway, that was one project that we did there. So that program has is no longer offered. But what's happened is there are professional Christian educators, people who either came into the profession the way I did, sort mm-hmm. of by accident, mm-hmm. and then got themselves trained, or just have lots of experience. Yeah. They aren't necessarily trained in Christian education. And there are those who majored in it, mm-hmm. You know, and knew right away that they wanted to be in that. So they have degrees in it, or they are actually ministers themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the coordinating committee of CAUCE, C-A-U-C-E, which is the Connecticut Association of United Church Educators.
Okay.
We meet monthly in Hartford at the Conference Center. There is a group of perhaps a dozen, maybe 15 of us on this committee, on this board. And we plan workshops and conduct workshops mm-hmm. and help the state, our conference center head of faith formation mm-hmm. in various ways.
And teach workshops too, don't you?
I will be teaching a workshop at NEOSI. I'm very excited about that. I'm going to be doing a workshop on using music in faith formation.
Ooh,
called
good.
Make a Joyful Noise. I'm very excited because they get really good people. I'm a little nervous, but
you'll do fine.
I have until May to figure out exactly. I've done a little bit of this particular idea with others, with adults. I'm not used to working with adults.
I know, it's different. It's very different.
So all of a sudden I have to. It's a different approach.
It's a different dynamic.
How you talk and how you speak and.
Yeah,
So I'm excited about that. So I'll be doing that in May.
What is...
And that's in New Hampshire. That's NEOSI.
And how you... That's N-E...
New England
yeah.
Association of United Church Educators.
Okay. The an acronym is fine, but you have to explain to me what these
well,
things
I
are.
Always have to stop and figure out what it is. But what's interesting about the CAUCE group that I meet with is that we have become community ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And we come from little churches, we come from little towns, we come from people who, I think everyone there is actually employed in the sense of having some sort of salary. But as far as how much time they work or whether they're full-time. You take a big church like West Hartford.
Oh, yeah.
And Dawn is a full-time employee, and she's a commissioned minister. I mean, that's her profession.
Yeah.
But how much we have in common and how different things are. We'll talk about Christmas next week. Everybody will be commiserating, probably. We have a meeting next week. And my friend Rosemary, who's in Old Greenwich,
mm-hmm.
she will tell us about the 6 services they have on Christmas Eve.
Ooh.
And I'll say, and 3 of them have pageants.
Oh, Lord.
And it's like, what? How do you do that? Oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I don't know how they do that, but they have a staff of 8 ministers
sure,
or something,
sure.
And they start, and with Christmas Eve on Sunday this year, that'll be really interesting. Probably the 8 services in Old Greenwich. So that is just so different than my setting. But as a representative for, theoretically, I'm the representative for the whole Litchfield County.
Mm-hmm.
We just had, and it wasn't my doing, Tracy Gray in Cornwall, who is me in Cornwall, at the Cornwall UCC, had a supper. And we invited all of the pastors and Christian educators from Litchfield County. There's two different associations, mm-hmm. Litchfield North and Litchfield South. We're in Litchfield North, to a supper, and we had 24 people there.
Oh, how wonderful.
We had 8 churches represented.
Oh, that's great.
And we were really thrilled.
Oh, yeah, you would be.
That we did that. And I'm in communication with all of those people by email, mm-hmm. sometimes snail mail, letting them know that COSSE exists,
yeah.
and that we're what's coming up, mm-hmm. and also how can
you
we help,
because
we
yeah.
want to know how we can help you.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a discernment period right now trying to figure out what it is that we can best do for our colleagues, mm-hmm. But because there are people who are really struggling in their churches, that they don't have many children, or they don't have a program for the children, or the churches themselves are struggling,
mm-hmm.
and yep. and just at this supper the other, it was just 2 or 3 weeks ago, the everyone was invited to bring something to share, so it was maybe something very simple. I brought a book and a song, What a Wonderful World. I mean, you know, here's yep. a really great resource. And somebody else had a resource about faith conversation at home, some ideas for that. And then this woman got up, and she's from South Britain Congregational Church, and I've got to look up what town that's in. It's in Litchfield, in the southern part of the county. And they lost in the last year, their minister retired, their CE person went somewhere else, and their organist left.
Oh, good grief. What's left?
And I mean, this didn't happen because of some kind of...
It just happened. Yeah.
And she was on the board of deacons, or I guess there was a Christian education committee of mm-hmm. some sort, but they're just trying to figure out what to do. And
sure.
they have children that are... They have no little kids. They have mm-hmm. kids that are only in 5th and 6th mm-hmm. grade and an 8th grader or something.
Oh, dear.
So they're trying to figure out...
What to do.
They're and what was so wonderful is she was comfortable enough to say this in this company.
Yeah.
And right away there was a group that could commiserate and perhaps offer help.
How wonderful.
But so often when we need help, mm-hmm. we don't ask for it.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard.
And so you struggle. And it's the very time when you need it.
Yeah.
The very time you need to ask for it
yeah.
is when you don't.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in church.
It happens at home. It happens all over.
And it's a shame because, as Pastor Diane says, you know, you find out afterwards that somebody's been really struggling,
yeah.
and that's why they weren't in church,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't know that they were because they didn't want anybody to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I
we're New Englanders. So
yeah,
what can you say?
We're rather conservative.
You know, we don't tell everybody
no,
our business.
No, You used to ask my grandmother, "How are you?" She could be dying. I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah. Not gonna give you the chapter and verse of it all.
No, so. You are half time.
No, theoretically, I'm 8 or 10 hours.
Are you salaried?
I'm salaried. I'm not an hourly worker.
Okay.
So, as Diane says, as long as something's happening there, nobody's punching a time clock.
Okay.
So some weeks, you know, last week I was preparing for our Advent workshop on Saturday night. I probably worked 30 hours easily.
Oh yeah,
easily.
Sure.
But this week. I still have work to do. next week will be really easy. Sunday is the pageant, so
oh good.
So still have to get costumes up and stuff like that.
And now, is it a pageant or is it just a tableau?
It is entirely tableau.
Oh good.
No lines.
Oh good.
My husband goes around at the beginning of. It's after church.
Yeah.
It's in the parish hall.
Uh-huh.
Grown-ups come back, get their coffee. The kids come in. And they sit in the audience. We have carols, and Lee goes around with scripture reading and hands it out to people, and they read the scripture, and the children come up and add themselves to the tableau, and we end up with one scene.
Lovely.
Yes, and it's exceedingly informal. I will hear on Tuesday, I will hear about my friends and all of the rehearsals that they have for their pageants. And how the, you know, two of the kings, the shepherd and Mary, weren't at the rehearsal, and I don't know what we're going to do.
And you're just going to swan in
and
say.
And I'm saying, you know, oh, golly, that's too bad. You know, whoever is in church and wants to do it. I mean, and we might, if it was snowy. And I've thought of this before. If we can't do it, because if it's a really bad weather day, mm-hmm. I'll hand a headpiece to an adult, and you just became a shepherd, and we may have to use a doll. But we always have a baby. Always have a mom and a dad and a baby, and it's their baby. It's mm-hmm. not,
yeah.
a child holding somebody else's child.
Yeah. Oh no.
We always use a real baby. So. So we have Holly Tierney and Jane Joseph will be our Mary and Joseph this year.
Holly
and baby,
Tierney?
Baby Marion.
And she's Holly is what?
Holly Tierney.
Is she married?
She's married to Jane, J-A-I-N, Jose, J-O-S-E. He's from India.
And he's Joseph?
He's Joseph.
And who's the baby?
Marion. I think the girls may be ahead.
Okay.
I haven't kept track.
Okay.
But I think we've had more female Jesuses than we have had male Jesuses over the years.
That doesn't make a lot of difference. Is there anything that you'd like to add to the congregational Christian education part before we go on to the secular part?
I don't think so.
Okay. No. Now, you're on several different secular boards, and one of them that you were very proud of was the Regional One Arts Fund. Tell us about that.
The Region 1 Arts Fund. Yes. It was established 23, 4, 5 years ago. I was not part of it then. It started because of a bright idea to have a total immersion day for children in the arts. And fourth grade was decided to be a really, really great year.
Yeah.
Old enough and not too old.
Yeah.
At a really good age, and they're not really old enough yet to get involved in the things at school. Usually they're not in the band yet, or you know, they're not in the athletic program. And this fourth grade is kind of a good in
it's
between.
It's a wonderful era. Yeah, it really
it's
is.
It's the in between. They're not little kids anymore, and they're not big kids. So that was established, and it happens in March when Hotchkiss is on vacation. Mm-hmm. And Hotchkiss has opened their doors to that happening for, I think this is the 23rd year.
I left in 91, mm-hmm. and it was mm-hmm. talked about, but it hadn't actually gotten off the ground then.
Right. So getting the whoever those right people were to get it going. And then the arts teachers, the art and music teachers and fourth grade teachers became the ones who basically run it, and some of them have done it yeoman work. And now it's so established now, I never dream of saying that it runs itself.
Oh, no.
It doesn't, but...
It's almost on automatic pilot.
It can be. I mean, all the artists who come... have to be, you know, they all have to be contacted and so on. But the way it works is the kids come from the 6 schools in Region 1 for all the fourth graders in the whole region come, and they go to the auditorium at Hotchkiss, and there is what's called a showcase. Everybody is some sort of performance. And then that lasts about 45 minutes or an hour. Then they go to a workshop. They've been put into groups that have kids from the various schools. There's at least one kid from their school that they know. Their teachers have decided who will be together in a particular group. And so there are 10 or 12 kids in a group. And they'll go and they'll do... We have standard ones like... the Ukrainian Easter eggs.
Okay.
Or... building a house in a cigar box with all kinds of odds and ends, or making puppets, or dance. Could be hip-hop, it could be ballet, drama. Mm-hmm. There's some drama games, music, drumming. Mm-hmm. I have a great drummer who comes, he's usually there, brings the African drums.
Ooh,
and then for lunch, the kids go back to the auditorium and eat their, they've brought their lunch, they eat their lunch there, and there's another showcase. And then they go to a second workshop. And it won't be, it'll be in a different kind of a different art form. So they work it out so they're not doing similar things. And of course they can't do all 16 or 12 or 50, however many there are. But they try to make it, you know, they work it so that they get good cross-section. And then they come back for a final showcase. And the last few years, the timing works that they bring kids from the high school whose musical is about to happen.
Ah!
And they get to see some of that, and they sometimes learn part of one of the dances. Ooh. Or something like that. It's really great.
Wonderful.
And they're doing King and I this year at the high school.
Oh, my word.
That'll be...
That's ambitious.
I know it, but oh, what a great thing to see some of those old shows come back.
Oh, sure. Oh, definitely.
A wonderful show.
You're on the board for that.
I'm on the board for that. We also give scholarships to about 40 kids a summer for to help with summer things. It could be related to the arts. It could be a camp. It could be guitar lessons for 6 sessions.
Okay.
It could be whatever, going to some kind of special music program thing. We give out about $10,000 of scholarship money to about 40 kids for the summer.
How do you fund this?
We have a relatively small endowment that we draw from. We need to really bolster that up, and we have an appeal. For the fourth grade arts day, we tend to appeal to businesses, mm-hmm. and then for our annual giving, we have a mailing list, and I think that has to be, we need to bolster that. And we are in the process of trying to get some larger grants, especially for, see if we can build up the endowment. Because if we can build up the endowment, then that puts less pressure.
Oh, sure.
We spend about $25,000 a year.
How many on the board?
Oh, golly, I don't know, 8 or 10 maybe.
Okay.
And we also... We have, it's 3 proms, so we have the fourth grade arts day, we have the summer scholarships for children, and we have grants for schools to apply if they're having, they might be having an assembly, someone come in, an artist in residence, or they might be wanting to take a group of kids on a field trip or whatever, and we will help with that.
Gail Krishna took her kids to the Metropolitan Museum of mm-hmm. Art, and mm-hmm. I think she said that she'd gotten a grant for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't ever fund anything entirely. So
no, but
I mean, which in a way would be nice, but then of course we would fund one thing.
Right. So you spread it around a little bit.
So we do try to spread it around.
Speaking of arts, tell me about the Salisbury Band.
Salisbury Band has been going for however long.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been in the band for that long. I've probably been in the band about 6 or 8 years. But I'm closely related to somebody who's been
in the
band.
I say this in truth, I had a wonderful, wonderful interview with Lee Collins on the band, on the Housatonics.
Yes.
It was great.
Mr. Music.
It's
going to die of terminal music, I think.
What instrument do you play?
I play the Glockenspiel, the bells, the bell lira.
Oh, lovely.
So that's my contribution to the band.
I
enjoy it. It's a lot
of
fun.
Of course you do.
And our daughter grew up in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Who's the director now?
David Gaedeke. David is retired 2 or 3 years ago from, it's longer than that now, my goodness. let's see, Sarah's 2 years. Probably about 4 years ago, he was the music teacher in North Canaan. He lives in New Hartford, so he's not a Salisburyan. In fact, there are very few, minimal Salisbury residents in the Salisbury band. They're coming from as far away as Canton now and Pine Plains.
I can't find it easily. How do you spell the Gaedeke?
Oh, G-A-E-D-E-K-E. I think it's a Dutch name.
It seems to me it would be.
Maybe. I don't think it's German.
And you are a trustee on
the Salisbury Association. I'm in the Historical Society with you.
Yes, you are.
I came in through the Holly Williams door.
Another one.
Another one.
Yeah.
I was there 10 years. I was there for the last 10 years.
I would docent when they couldn't get anybody else, and it was usually Memorial Day weekend, 4th of July, that sort of thing. I did it first under Jerry Appleyard, and then I did it the second time under Lou Burgess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fascinating experience.
I came in when they wrote a new, or I should say a new script was written. They wanted to add the kitchen.
Oh, all right.
They hired this woman to write this script, which I never really... Anyway, they got some actresses, quote-unquote, to play the part. Well, some were still... I'm not sure anyone was being Mariah. I think some of the younger women, there were two or three of them really good actresses. Mm-hmm. They were being, I think, a niece. They were being a church, I think.
All right.
And then those of us in the kitchen were being Mariah's sister from Litchfield. I don't remember what her name was. It was a little shaky.
Yeah.
And but we did that for a couple of years. And then we had good turnouts. And then, things eased off. And the financing, I think there may have been a grant for that.
Oh, yeah, probably.
And this was when Carrie Kaser was there. And yeah. Carrie did a really great job. And I think there might have been some grant money there. And then we let the kitchen program go. And then I became Mariah. I think there were four of us doing Mariah. Khaki Schaefer was one of them. Mm-hmm. I was one. Betty Snyder from Sharon was one. And there was a woman who lived in Lee. I can't remember her name offhand. And the four of us were doing it. And then I was doing it.
All right.
And that was Summers.
Yep.
Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh, yes.
And we were open, and Lou Pacioretty was in
the
Cannon
Museum.
And
there it was.
There it was. And then, everybody basically in town, I think, had seen. And it was really interesting because it was such a big brouhaha.
Yes.
So much had been made of the new drama and everything. And I gave my son a tour. And he said, "Oh, and I know that this is where the writing is on the glass." He knew half of the tour, and he had done it probably when he was in your class or grade it was.
Yeah, we used to use the Holly Williams
fourth house. Or fifth grade, whichever grade it went to, or sixth grade went to Holly Williams' house. So he remembered a lot of stuff, and I thought, "Well, jeepers, I guess the script hasn't really changed that much after all." They did try to, I think, so I must have gone in the late 90s.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when the house was sold. Do you know?
I'm going to say 2010, but I may be wrong.
Was
on
it that late?
I think it was. I think it
okay,
was.
So I may have gone. Oh, so it was late 90s or around then, 90, 98, whenever. I've forgotten where I was going with that.
That's okay. That's all right. Is there anything that you'd like to add to the secular portion of this before we close?
Of what I do with my life? Not really.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Time to call.